Great to have you here on the Alex Pearson Show. We've been talking about the numbers, which are going in the wrong direction. And I don't need to tell you, if you're waiting for a medical procedure of any kind, then you're waiting a long time. And we've got 21 million procedures backlogged since the pandemic, and that's going to take years to clear. But when you look at the numbers from 2021 to 2022, 1,417 people in the province of Ontario died waiting for services. But of course, that's only the numbers we're allowed to see. So this is just a snapshot, which I think reveals a sobering reality about our universal health care. Colin Craig is president of think tank SecondStreet.org. He joins us now. Good to have you, Colin. It's been a while.
Well, thank you for having me, Alex. Appreciate it.
You know, I've been talking about this, I've been talking about this a lot lately because I just don't think it's a problem we can ignore anymore. But when you see the numbers broken down the way you guys have done it, it's pretty shocking to see the numbers going up that way. We've always known waiting lists are a thing, but when you look at it, I mean, we are basically picking winners and losers.
Yeah, I think what we need to reflect on is that the healthcare system was in a crisis before COVID came along. And what COVID did is it made a bad situation worse. But definitely we need to be thinking and talking about healthcare reform because these numbers are going in the wrong direction. They were getting worse and worse and worse. And there's some pretty sad stories behind them, we have no doubt. The problem is that the Ontario government hasn't provided any real details behind these numbers. So we know 1,417 patients died in that last fiscal year. We don't know what they were waiting for while they were waiting for surgery. Was it a hip operation? Was it a heart procedure? You're probably not going to die because you don't get your hip operation in time, but certainly some patients have died in Ontario because they haven't received their heart operations in time. And we talked to one mother who told us about her daughter, and that's exactly what happened with her. So we have no doubt that there are some very tragic stories behind these. And, you know, I wouldn't dismiss cases where patients are dying waiting for hip operations and knee operations and those types of things, because that would affect their quality of life during their final year or 2 years or however long they're waiting. So no one wants to be stuck in their apartment with chronic pain during their final year. I mean, that would be a horrible way to go. So we definitely think there needs to be more information released from the government. And certainly we hope that they've done more analysis to look into these to provide more details like other provinces do.
Yeah, I mean, it's not until you've got chronic pain in your hips or your knees or your back or wherever that you start to realize your quality of life is reduced every day. And then the longer you wait, then everything else starts to hurt. And then before you know it, you're taking pills to help you feel better. And that can turn into a whole bunch of other addictive issues. And then you can find yourself with mental health issues. I mean, it's like a domino. But you guys got your information through a Freedom of Information request. And so, look, that's really the only way we can hold governments to account these days. But it is getting harder and harder to get information that belongs to us. So what are you waiting for? Because you're challenging this, but what is it that you're waiting for to be able to tell the true story here?
Well, let me tell you what Nova Scotia does. They will provide details on what is happening behind patient deaths that occur while they're waiting for surgery in the province, while they're on a waiting list. They will tell you for each case when the patient went on the waiting list, how long it was until they passed away, how that compared with the recommended wait time if a surgery was scheduled. They also certainly tell you what the patient was waiting for, which is one of the most important pieces of information. And they'll even tell you, for example, last year they said there were 367 patients in Nova Scotia who died waiting for surgery. And they said of those, 51 were cases where the patient was waiting for procedure which could have potentially saved their life. And then they break it down even further and they say, okay, of those 51 who are waiting for things like heart surgeries and that, over three quarters of them had waited longer than the recommended wait time. So that's a really good way of getting at the data to examine just, you know, how much of a problem there is, how many patients are passing away because the government essentially is letting them die, letting them down. And so the numbers from Ontario, from Nova Scotia, they're not good. But the data quality is good, and it can help that government identify the problem, analyze it, be accountable to the public, and we're just not getting that from the province of Ontario.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think it would surprise anybody when you look at the urban centers. Like, obviously, Toronto is the busiest of the you know, it's not the most people. So this is where you're going to see some of the problems, you know, becoming the worst. I mean, if I go to Hamilton or Barrie, you can get like an MRI or a CAT scan sooner. If you're in Toronto, you're up against a lot more people. And so I would be very interested. And I don't know if you have that kind of data to break down which areas of the province are actually suffering the most deaths because of the long waits.
You know, that's something we've been trying to get at. We have received some data from different hospitals in Ontario, and some of them are quite good. I'll give a shout out to Hamilton Health Sciences Centre. They provide very extensive data, so you can find the type of information like I was talking about with Nova Scotia. It's not quite the same, but it's certainly a lot better. And the interesting thing is that Ontario Health says, well, we can't release any more data because it's confidential. And they also
we're not asking for people's names. I'm not asking for your prognosis.
Well, exactly. You know? And we've been pretty clear, too, across the country when we research this. We don't want patient names. We want patients to have their confidentiality. We definitely don't want to breach that. But we do want the details behind these cases anonymously so that we can understand just how what's happening with patient suffering in this country. And so, you know, Ontario Health says, well, it's confidential. But yet Hamilton Health Sciences Centre is operating under the same freedom of information laws, and they provide a ton more information. Ontario Health also says, well, we don't have the information. It's like, well, which is it? And if you don't have the information, my goodness, why don't you have the information? Shouldn't you be concerned and looking into these details? Shouldn't you be analyzing and informing the minister how many patients are dying on waiting lists each year? While waiting for procedures which could have potentially saved their lives? I mean, there's, generally speaking, in Canada, there's a real lack of accountability when it comes to analysis and tracking of data and releasing that information to the public when it comes to patient suffering. Because you just mentioned that there's all kinds of ways that patients suffer beyond losing their life on a waiting list. Patients will, you know, be put on a year or 2 year long waiting list for hip surgery. They're dealing with chronic pain. They're popping painkillers, and then they end up with liver problems because they've been popping painkillers for so long. Some patients develop depression. Some have suicidal thoughts. I mean, these are all very tragic side effects from long waiting lists that happen in this country. And governments do not track that information and disclose it, but they certainly should.
Well, they should. I mean, because we have no other choice of where to get our medical care in this country. And the Canada Health Act should have said it at the beginning and seen, like, we need an accountability check. Provinces must put information up. But it's not in the interest of the government of the day to put information that doesn't play well out there. And so, look, there's plenty of blame to go around government to government on who is failing to act and deliver what we pay billions of dollars for. Were you able to find out in your data? I mean, the waiting lists aren't new. Have you been able to go back in time and see if, you know, if there were other blips along the way that we had seen at any other time in our history? Because waiting lists used to be a really big story, but we just don't even talk about it now because it's just like, it's just been accepted.
Yeah, and that is, I think, one of the biggest problems that we face in this country when we talk about healthcare reform is that people have sort of become numb to this idea that waiting a year to get your hip done is normal. That is not normal. You talk to people in other countries that have universal healthcare systems, and you know, quite often they're getting their those types of procedures done a lot faster. The Commonwealth Fund in the United States, they do a big international report on healthcare systems. Incidentally, they rank the U.S. 11th of 11 countries. Canada's second last at 10th. But the countries all ahead of us, when they do this research, they all have shorter waiting lists. They have universal healthcare systems, countries like Australia, Sweden, Norway. And I think this is what often gets distorted by special interest groups who don't want reform. They want everyone to think it's our choice, our system, or the U.S. And that is just such a perverse way of looking at this situation. There are lots of countries that do the same thing like Canada. They cover everyone. No one's going to go bankrupt because they, you know, they have a heart operation or whatever. And ultimately, what they do differently is they have those public choices like we have. They also allow private choices, so patients have more options available to them. And those who want to pay out of pocket, well, they can go to a private clinic, and they're taking pressure off of the public healthcare system. So those on public waiting lists, they get to move ahead in line every time someone decides to pay for it. So, I mean, that is one big benefit of these other models, and ultimately they provide better care to patients.
I know, but you know, we get the same union kind of rhetoric, yeah, that it can't work, that we'll be stealing doctors and nurses, that people with no choice will be left with a bad choice, or, you know, people under the margins will have, you know, substandard care, which is just not true. But I mean, for the unions, it comes down to protecting their dues. They want to make sure that they're robust. So they don't want to see any other system coming in. Have you seen the conversation change now? Because you've been looking into health policy for a really long time. Have you started to see a shift now that you actually think might lead to some changes?
Yes, is the short answer. And, you know, I've been following healthcare on and off for 20 years now, and I do think that we've seen a sea change in terms of what people talk about when it comes to reform, where the public opinion is at. I know that from the start of the pandemic until this past fall, there was about a 11% jump in the number of Canadians who support this idea of giving patients more choice outside of the public system. So, you know, mm-hmm. to be clear, that would mean that you could still go to a government hospital and get your care and sit on a waiting list and whatever, and you're not going to have to pay for it. You're paying for it through your taxes. But you would also have this choice of going to maybe a nonprofit clinic down the street and paying for it, or maybe a private clinic. So that mm-hmm. type of idea has support among a majority of Canadians. It's over 60%. And there's, like I said, there's a 10% jump. And I think what's happened is that Canadians are just fed up with waiting. I mean, the stories, Alex, are just incredible in this country. They're so sad. You know, I mm-hmm. mentioned a nurse in Ontario, a retired nurse. She lost her daughter due mm-hmm. to a long waiting list for a heart procedure. It was an entirely preventable procedure. And now that, sadly, that daughter's gone, leaving behind a few kids. What's crazy is that this is actually the second time that retired nurse has lost a daughter due to long waiting lists on Ontario's healthcare system. The other one had passed away many years prior. But those types of things are happening. We've got senior citizens who were living like very active lives, and suddenly they develop a hip problem or a knee problem or whatever. They're dealing with chronic pain. They're stuck in their apartments. I mean, it's terrible how we treat patients in this country. We have a government monopoly, for the most part, that is often failing. And at the same time, the government's just not allowing patients any other choice, really, but leaving their province and, in many cases, their country to go and get the care they need. Yeah. So it's we need a very serious, mature conversation in this country about healthcare reform if we're ever going to improve outcomes for patients.
100%. We need basic leadership, Colin. That's what we need. We'll talk again, because every time you send me your data, I'm just like, what? Oh, my God. But I'll look forward to seeing the data once you're able to hopefully finagle that. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Alex. Appreciate it.
That is Colin Craig. He is with the think tank secondstreet.org. They look into this. They watch for it. And they're revealing what a lot of us, I think, knew. But just don't talk about it. As long as we're not talking about it. You look at the numbers like they're just numbers. No, these are people. People's stories, people's lives. And I've heard many, many stories from a lot of listeners who share their stories. And it's tragic. I'm Alex Pearson of The Alex Pearson Show. You're listening to 640 Toronto.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.